Balls, this is the Seahawks Collective presented by Hog Media, and it's another week when we get to recap a Seahawks win 37-9 over the Falcons in Atlanta. Mike McDonald became the first head coach in franchise history to start his career with back-to-back 10-win seasons, and certainly there's more to come for the Seahawks, and here to talk all about it with me tonight, Michael Sean Dugar, covering the Hawks for The Athletic, Brian Nemhauser, the Hawk blogger, and Rob Staton from the Seahawks draft blog. And Rob, you are in a very special place right now. The Disney cruise, I see you have a new accessory. So would you mind just giving us a little bit of how that's been so far?
Yes, my new look. I've decided that I'm going to not wear caps from now on. I'm going to wear this bandana instead. So no, it's pirate night, and I am not just a 41-year-old British bloke who's decided to wear bandanas. It is a pirate night, and they gave them out for free, and I was going to take it off before we did the show, but I thought, bollocks to it, I'm going to keep it on. So here we are.
Hey, I like it. But yeah, if anybody's got any questions about the Disney cruise, leave them in the chat, but also about the Seahawks. These guys are here for an hour. Use their expertise. They know more than any of us do and with the Seahawks this season so far. But I want to jump right into it because this game was really the tale of two different halves, right? In the first half, the Seahawks were struggling to get in the end zone. Darnold was almost sacked in the end zone, and it was tied at halftime. And then they come out in the second half, and momentum completely changes thanks to Rashid Shaheed taking it to the house immediately out of halftime. And it really happened so fast that you might have even missed it, but certainly not any of the guys in this group, right, Rob?
Well, look, I thought that was that was probably one of the most enjoyable second halves of Seahawks football I've ever watched. Because at halftime, I was kind of stressed. I'm in this kind of basically in this prison cell. You know, that's the size of the room that I'm in. Like, usually I do some really good pacing after a half like that. You know, I've got a lot of space in the house. You know, the carpet's getting worn out because I'm walking back and forward, contemplating what's going to happen in the third and fourth quarter. But it wasn't the room to do that here. So it was quite a stressful half time because I'm just thinking of that Bills game when they lost to Miami a few weeks ago. This is before Miami obviously went on the run that they're on. And the Rams losing to the Panthers and stuff like this, and thinking, surely the Seahawks aren't going to lose to the Kirk Cousins-led Atlanta Falcons with so even their better players that were still available were getting injured during the game. And to just cut that kick return right at the start of halftime, and then everything that followed was just perfect. You know, the defense, unbelievable. Sam Darnold was a lot better. Special teams, fantastic. And it just made you realize that how much I appreciate that they blow away these teams from now on. There's actually there's quite a few Seahawks fans on this boat, and I had my Seahawks hat on for the meal. This one guy came over, he got told off from his wife because he spotted a Seahawks fan, and he came to talk to me about the game, and his wife started shouting at him because he should be with his family. My family didn't care because they're used to it. So he was just kind of hovering over our table, and all he was talking about is, oh, he blew out the Falcons. And I just embraced the whole thing. I was like, yeah, but you know, we'd just forgotten about the first half. So I just think it's fantastic. And it shows that this is a team that means business, that they're heading in the right direction. 10 wins already. I think a lot of people would have been happy with a 10-win season. And they've got that with four games to go. So I couldn't be happier.
It is pretty incredible. And Brian, I'd love your thoughts on Shaheed's game. You know, four catches, 67 yards, the 100-yard touchdown return, kickoff return. But also wondering off of Rob's statement, when you see and you're in an unconventional location, you see a Seahawks fan, are you going right up to them?
No, AB, I'm not. I mean, I don't avoid them, but, you know, increasingly, you know, people that watch the Seahawks Collective and other things like recognize and they'll come up and say hello. And I'm always trying to be kind. I was in the Atlanta airport heading to get a lift or whatever. And a guy introduced me. He said, oh, I love your show. I said, oh, what's your name? And told me his name. And next thing I know, he's like the Seahawks VP of brand or something like that. So we're having like a great conversation all the way in. So certainly there are plenty of Seahawks fans on the flight out. And as far as Rashid Shaheed goes, I feel like a Kirk Cousins-ism is appropriate. I felt like I was R-E-L-A-X to everybody else You know, the weeks prior that, I guess that's an Aaron Rodgersism, not a Kirk Cousinsism. But he just, he's been a good player. He is still a good player. There's no reason he's not a good player anymore. There's no reason that the Seahawks and Clint Kubiak are not going to figure out how to incorporate him. And I've commented before that I think a good game in this offense for Rashid Shaheed would be like 3 to 4 catches for like 70 plus yards. And he ended up pretty much right there. I think that's what a good game is going to look like. Is he going to sometimes pop over 100 yards with a 60 plus yard touchdown catch? Sure. But this is a guy that's going to get you 2 to 3 explosives sometimes in the same game. He is going to threaten the defense. He's going to mutate that defense to have to think about him. And during this game, every time he lined up, you could see the safety slide over to have to account for him. I don't think they were necessarily doing that with other receivers that the Seahawks have had. So, yeah, outstanding game from him. And the kickoff return that Mike McDonald apparently called, you know, it reminded me a little bit of the Percy Harvin Super Bowl moment, of just starting the second half and completely, I mean, I think that ended the game, even though it was just 13-6. I think it was kind of over after that.
I like what you said about Mike McDonald, making sure that we all knew that he, yes, told Rashid Shaheed that, hey, get this one. Let's take it back to the house, right? Let's get this one for a touchdown. And that's what he did. But Mike, when you watch this player, you know, really have his first breakout game for the Seahawks, what stood out to you?
It's funny you mentioned no one missed it. I actually did miss the kickoff. I was on the concourse selling some books, actually, to some fans. Because I remember I came up, I only missed like a little bit, but I remember I come back to my seat and the Falcons have the ball. I was like, oh, that's weird. I knew the Seahawks were getting it coming out of the half. So like, and I saw, so the first play I see is Nick punch Kyle Pitts's, I think, helmet or something like that and get hurt. I'm like, why is Nick even on the field? That was what I was thinking. I was like, why is Nick even out there? He's not on kickoff coverage. What's going on? And then I look up and I'm like, the Seahawks score. And then I go to find the video on my phone. I'm like, oh, that's great. Good for him. So I did miss it in real time. I don't do that often, usually. But yeah, I try to give books to people. Shout out to the couple fans I met on the concourse, Seahawks fans living in Atlanta. But yeah, I was very happy to see that. You know, I was one of the people wondering where the production was from Shaheed. I was like, yo, 4 catches, 37 yards, you know, especially relative to the other guys that got traded at the deadline, who had been more productive. Not totally apples to apples for what it's worth, but Jacoby Myers hit the ground running in Jacksonville. A.D. Mitchell was in, Mechie were both producing with the Jets, you know, on crappier offenses. So I was like, hey, why can't Rashid do some of that? And then there you go. It's like they heard it. Bullying works sometimes. I thought it was great. I think going forward, good lesson for the Seahawks to see, maybe opponents to see, is if you put your number one guy on Jax and you follow him all game, consequences and repercussions. That's what they did. I think all of Shaheed's catches came with Mike Hughes on him. Mike Hughes is their number two corner behind AJ Terrell, who was busy getting torched by Jax on the other side of the field, leaving Mike all by his lonesome to then get beat by Shaheed except for one back shoulder throw. And I think that's where that was an instructive performance from Shaheed in my mind, because teams are going to try that. Maybe not the Rams, because they trust both their outside guys, but like the Panthers, for instance. Like, all right, J.C. Horn, I believe he's back for them. I'm not sure, but if he is by then, cool. You go cover Jax. Well, that means you got Michael Jackson, who I like, following Shaheed all day. God bless. Like, he should have a good game. If the Niners do the same thing with Lenore and have Renardo Green or whoever, or Upton Stout cover Shaheed, again, God bless. I like that matchup for the Seahawks. So I think that was instructive for the Seahawks, for opponents, just to put that on tape and make teams have to choose. Do we trust our guys, you know, or are we maybe break structure what we do? Like, they have to choose, you know. And I think that's how these guys end up running the table, is like having dictating the terms in that way to the defense.
And you have to imagine that is what the Seahawks front office was hoping for when they got Shaheed at the trade deadline, and just the more weapons that they'll have with him. And it's funny, Mike, I think I've heard you say that term torched by Jack so many times this season, and I love it. I hope we can keep saying that, and that's what you hope to have as a result from having Shahid on the field if you aren't getting production out of him to open up JSN more. But just, Rob, these two guys have both touched on it. How do you see maybe Shahid taking the pressure away from JSN and being his own threat really on the field?
Well, yeah, I think exactly what Mike said. You know, if they're going to put the best cornerback on Jackson Smith and Jigba, then you've got to find the opportunities elsewhere, and not many teams. Look, the NFL is going through a period right now where there aren't very many good cornerbacks in the league. So the teams that have actually got one, most of them haven't got two. So you should be able to find those opportunities, and that seems to be the case. I also missed the kick return.
It's all coming out. It's like no one wanted to talk about it, and then later...
Solidarity.
Yeah.
Hey, it just takes one.
My situation was a bit different. I just kind of, you know, I was preoccupied during halftime. This is going to definitely be too much information. I mentioned it on the live stream on Sunday. I went for a Waz, and then while that was happening, that might be British slang. You can probably work out what that means. And I mean, it was so quick, the kick return, that in the time it took to have the Waz and come back and watch the game, they'd scored. So I had to rewind and watch the kick return. And then when I did the stream, I actually referred to it. It must have been a magic piss, because as soon as the piss had happened, you've got the kick return in a completely different second half. So there was that hashtag magic piss was filling the comment section.
You're not on my wrong, stream after the game. It's adding up. It's adding up. And I think I can take back a little bit what I said in the beginning about ask these guys any questions, because there was a part of the game that they did not see. But Brian, I got to ask from you, like, you know, when I watch these games and I know that I'm going to be covering it, I have this like, shoot, I can't miss a single down. I want to hear everything. I want to see everything. And it can be that stressful tension of, oh, I want to go be there, you know, do my books, or I got to use the restroom. Or how do you handle watching a Seahawks game and getting food, getting water? Because, you know, it's 5 hours that you're there probably in total, pregame, postgame.
Well, first thing, AB, is that now Rob has signed up to take, a trip to the restroom at specific times throughout the rest of the season.
Momentum shifts when we need a momentum shift.
Yes, expect messages to be sent Rob's way whenever we need a momentum shift. But, I don't miss a play, honestly. And that includes when I'm in the stadium, the guy that I've shared season tickets with for 20 plus years, he does not understand how I never miss. Like, I will, when I have to take my non-magic trip to the restroom, I can get from my seats to the restroom and back to my seats before a play's elapsed. Cause you kind of figure out the rhythms of the game. Now, unlike Mike, who this is his job, he is excellent at and covers the team, I'm a fan. And so I'm emotionally invested in what's going on there. And to miss a play is painful for me. So I prioritize that over relationships. I prioritize that over food. I prioritize that over, you know, bodily functions, as it may be. And in this case, that worked out for me. But you know what? I got no issues with, you know, selling and signing books and taking magic peas. So I'm all good.
Hey, we need Mike to sell all the books so he can start writing the one about this Mike McDonald defense. That is what we are concerned about. So let's talk about it, because the rookie, Nick the Man Worry, is I think the nickname that we should be calling him. One sack, one interception, a field goal block, six tackles, just some of it, right? And Devin Witherspoon was saying after the game, like, what can he do? There's nothing he can do. Just absolutely ridiculous performance from him. So Mike, just would love to know, like, can you describe the performance that you saw from this rookie on Sunday?
Yeah, I think the more I've covered the NFL, you know, I still think the combine itself is like kind of useless, but every once in a while you do like see the stuff translate to the game. Like the field goal block in particular, like when I watched the film of it, I was like, oh yeah, that's why you have them do like these short shuttles and stuff. Like it tests their explosiveness and their broad jump and stuff like that. It all just comes together. And I remember when they drafted Nick, John was like, that might've been the best combine workout I've ever seen. And the athletic testing numbers track with that as well. Like sometimes the freak athlete guy is actually a good player as well. And sometimes he's not, you know, it works both ways. But that game, I was like, oh, That's why they have them do some of those drills. Or like when Emmanuel Forbes tipped that ball that should have been a touchdown to Shahid, I was like, oh, that's why they measure their hand size, right? Like sometimes it does just show up like, oh, that's why they do some of that stuff. But like, yeah, I mean, Nick, I bring up his athletic testing because there are, when you are around this for so long, you do see some guys who are like, why didn't that freak of nature guy pan out? Whether it's a pass rusher or a receiver or whatever, a lineman, because they don't have, like, football is not just being a good athlete, it's being a good ball player. And I thought that game was an example of Nick is really just a ball player. It reminds me of when, remember when Kobe got drafted and they had him moving around quite a bit. He was like an outside corner at Cincinnati, got moved to nickel, trained all offseason at nickel, came back, got moved to safety, hurt his toe, and it was just like he didn't know where he was going to be. And then I remember asking one time, just like in passing, it's like, how you handling all this? Like, he's like, I'm a ball player, bro. Like, just put me somewhere, I'm going to play ball. Like, it doesn't really matter where you put me. And Nick's like that. I haven't asked him that, but it shows up, you know, and that's really cool to see, because sometimes you can get these like tweener dudes from college, and Rob knows this a lot as much as the scouts college guys. Like, sometimes you're like, I don't know where that kid's going to play. He's too light to do this, or his arms to do this, or whatever. And you struggle with guys and they get drafted to the wrong team, you know, and they just don't fit. LJ Collier was a tweener, for instance. Like, you get these tweener guys. Nick could have been that. And be like, what do you do with this kid? Well, Nick's, or Mike McDonald's like, I'm going to play him. That's the answer. I'm going to play him wherever I need to. And that's cool that it's working out. He's been playing. He's had some really good games before this. Jacksonville was good for him. There's another couple good ones in there. But yeah, I was really glad to see him get around the ball and just be deployed in all the different ways that he was. Because when he is like clicking, when he and Spoon are clicking, they're just like such two unique players, more so than anyone else on the defense, not just the secondary. It makes these guys really hard to stop. Any personnel grouping that you put out there, they can match and win that down. You know, that's rare. Not a lot. Even the good defenses don't have the versatility that Seattle has. Like, Houston might be better, but they just line up and say, we're running cover four or cover one. Good luck to you, buddy. Whereas the Seahawks are like, you don't know what we're doing. Good luck. You know, so it's really cool to see Nick fit kind of perfectly into that. Coming out of the draft, there was no guarantee the team that drafted him was going to be able to maximize him based on like his measurables.
Mike, I thought something that I saw you say earlier this week on X, I wrote it down. You were like, the Colts want Mike McDonald preparing for everything imaginable this week. And that's really what it feels like with the Mike McDonald defense, regardless of the week. And something that he said last week was just, he's like, I hate to admit it, but we're kind of just making it up as we go with Nick Emenwori. And so, you know, Brian, when you think about just how fun that probably is for a coach, what do you think that's like for Mike McDonald coaching this defense?
Well, I mean, as someone who I know likes nicknames, AB, I think we've got to bring up, you threw out one nickname for Nick Emenwori. I think I've heard Demon Worry. I think Big Nickel is up there as another one I've heard. So I think he is definitely deserving of a nickname. And I also want to just double down on what Mike said, that the pairing of him and Devin Witherspoon is what makes this defense unique. Like, all the other players are good in their own right, and they have, I'm not saying they're the two best players necessarily, but what those two players can do, they are jokers. Like, they can give Mike McDonald what he needs to beat any hand that an opposing offensive coordinator puts on the field against him. And they are just now starting to hit their stride about playing off of each other, feeling healthy enough to do what they want to do. Cause I think, you know, Spoon's been dealing with that knee since early in the season. And I think he's just starting to get back to himself. And I think one of the coolest things about Nick Emenwori is not that he is the best athlete in the history of the sport for the safety position. If he was going to be narrowed down to that, that's cool. He could have just been that. But I don't think he would be the player he is if he wasn't someone who immediately went in and was knocking on Mike McDonald's open door all the time, asking him questions, was not someone who immediately fit into that defensive back room that had a dog like Devin Witherspoon, that had a vet like Julian Love, that had Tariq Woolen, who's an alien in his own right, and has been an absolute joy to coach. From, you know, you talk to every coach, he's going to get coached by Adam Dirty, who's working with, you know, the defensive ends on pass rush moves. He's working with, you know, every coach pretty much on the staff, on the defensive staff, and he's on special teams as well. To be able to bend the way he bends at that size is remarkable for a guy that's also a defensive back. So I think he's the total package, and he's 21 years old, which I will keep hammering home. Like, I asked Ty Okada in the locker room afterwards, like, what were you doing when you were 21 years old? And he's like, I was still in college trying to figure out who I was. So who knows what this guy will be. JSN was 21 when he was drafted. Look where he is 2 years later.
Yeah, that's wild to be that young and to be able to just have the success so far. So, Rob, just do you mind responding? Are you as excited about maybe specifically more that duo with Spoon and Nick Demon Worry, Nick Big Nickel Nick, whatever we're going to call him? And let us know in the chat what you think and respond to Brian's nicknames for him.
Yeah, I like the Demon Worry one. That sounds pretty cool. I think the thing with Emin Worry is... You've got Kyle Hamilton, who people kind of view, I suppose, as the top hybrid safety, at least until this season. And then you've got sort of Derwin James, who's been around for some time now. And both of those players lasted longer in the draft than perhaps they should have done based on their talent, because they weren't very quick. Now, Nick Emmanuel ran a 4.38. So I don't think... So watching Emmanuel play, you could argue that he's got quite that same instinct that maybe a Hamilton has. And Derwin James is one of the savviest players in the league. But in time, maybe he can reach that kind of a level. But he has the physical tools that Hamilton and James simply do not have. And that's what's exciting. Like, if he can get to sort of their technical level, he could be the best player of his kind to play in the NFL. So... he's got the best head coach possible to help get him there. It does seem to me like Mike McDonald was possibly the one banging the table to have him in Warrior and to trade up and go and get him. He seemed very excited when they made that move, and very excited since making that trade and seeing him on the field and seeing what he's capable of. It's going to be exciting to see what he can achieve. I also think you have to give the Seahawks a lot of credit here, because I'm seeing a lot of this now. People are sort of saying, why did... the rest of the league allow him to last until round two? How have people allowed this to happen? There were some question marks about Emin Worry. There were some question marks on tape. There was a feeling that he wasn't the easiest player to manage at times. So it wasn't just a no-brainer to go and trade all the way up and go and select him. The Seahawks deserve some credit for actually having the balls to do that. And so say, we've got a conviction on this player, that he fits our defense, that we've got the right people in our building that can help get this player to where he can get to, and then we're going to work on that. And they've pulled it off. So they deserve all the flowers. I think we're actually doing the Seahawks a disservice to say it was a real simple thing to just go up and trade up and get him. I think they deserve a ton of credit for going up and getting him, and they deserve to have the player that we're seeing. Somebody pointed out to me, he got a 53.2 grade from PFF this weekend. Somebody pointed out he had some bad coverage plays, and I thought, well, I've not rewatched the game, but they must have been absolutely horrendous for that performance to get a 53.2 grade, because if that is not an 80 or 90 grade performance with the impact that he had, I don't know what is.
Can I jump in real quick? Rob, where do you think Nick Emin Worry would fit in, on the draft board for the 2026 draft? Where would he go in this draft?
Probably third overall. It's a terrible draft. It's a really bad draft. And, you know, when the season's finished, there's going to be a whole bunch of people who are going to have to work very hard to get people excited about this draft, including people who write a draft blog. But there's a few players, Elijah Arroyo and Gray Zabel would probably be up there as well, because it's such a poor draft. And, you know, it's quite hard to sort of list. There's probably about three of, I can think off the top of my head, three players I'd definitely have ahead of him. But that top 10, without a shadow of a doubt.
I'm curious just because it is circulating in the conversation, and he is up there right behind Carson Schwestinger out of UCLA now for the Browns. He's leading all rookies in tackles, but Nicky Amonwori does have a chance to become the defensive rookie of the year. And how realistic is that, Mike? Do you see that happening? Could he take it home for the Seahawks?
Man, he's from last I checked, what is Nick like plus 500 or something like that? Plus 550 compared to the, hey, say the guy's last name again. I got it wrong on our pod.
If you Carson Schwestinger, right. Schwestinger.
Oh, I was for sure not.
And truth be told, I only know that because I was going to UCLA football games last season when he was, his last year there. And the entire time, it's just Carson Schwestinger on the tackle, Carson Schwestinger on the tackle, Carson, like the whole game. So I've heard it enough times to know that the dude is a baller.
There we go. Yeah, no, he can play. Cleveland's defense is falling off a little bit, but he is a baller. I think that, man, the defensive rookie of the year thing has been kind of funky because sometimes you'll get like guys who are on bad teams, like Sauce was when he won. I'm just like, all right. How much are you watching them actually? You know, like how much are you watching the Browns defense right now and not just watching Miles or like Shador's a big draw right now? Like how many people are watching the Browns and like not just taking a wise when the Browns defense is on the field, right? Because Shador's not playing. So I think it's possible. I just think he'll need just more splash plays. I think that's what sadly is probably going to decide it. I don't think it should. I think that we should look more at just like the down-to-down impact that a player has, which is a lot easier when you're a middle linebacker in a green dot, like Carson is. I'm not going to try the last name again. But I do think what's going to help is he's got at least one more primetime game, maybe more if they get a flex, if that Panthers game is like primetime as well, then you get back-to-back. That always helps, you know. We watched Seahawks World is – we watched Julian Love make the Pro Bowl off of basically picking off Jalen Hurts twice on Monday Night Football. I honest to God do not think he sniffs the Pro Bowl without having those two interceptions on Monday Night Football. And that's the impact, I think, of primetime games right now, particularly for guys in some markets. Brian and I just watched at least, what, three or four guys on Wednesday just basically say that Seattle was in Nebraska damn near. They were like, hey, nothing to do here but play football. It's like, guys. We have an international airport. Like it's not that small of a city. It's so strange. Especially Ernest. Ernest is from like a small town place in Georgia, bro. He's talking about nothing to do here. Anyway, but yeah, I think it's gonna benefit Nick to like have sack Stafford on Thursday night, get another pick, you know, in that Panthers game or something like that. Grab some more sacks, and then I think it'll be. He has a chance. But right now, I think the betting odds are really, really heavy in that Browns guy's favor.
Well, we will see. Can he take it home for the Seahawks for the first time ever, actually? And a guy you mentioned, Julian Love, you know, there were a lot of incredible moments for the Seahawks defense. It was 8 takeaways for the defense in the past 2 games, like literally ridiculous. They've held each opponent under 100 yards on the ground. Again, this opponent, again. But for me, I think what stood out was seeing Julian Love back out there. He had that pass breakup that forced the Falcons punt early in the game. You're like, man, he is back playing for the first time since week 4. I think the cool part about that as well is then you see Ty Okada also make plays in that game and just seeing how they complement each other post game and just the synergy that this team has, regardless of really who you are for the Seahawks team. But, you know, we've been anticipating Julian Love's return and Jaren Reed's return, both players who really did make their presence known in this game. So for you, Brian, would you just mind describing like the impact that their presence had in this game?
Yeah, I mean, I did enjoy the fact that Mike McDonald shared that the team had done the slow motion video replay themselves and determined that DeMarcus Lawrence did, in fact, get credit for that forced fumble. But Jaren Reed was right there. And I do wonder what it's like to play with a club on your hand like that. I mean, it's pretty wild that those guys, you know, are out there in the trenches just whacking each other with a big cast on one mitt. And one of the things that changes there is not necessarily how they play individually on the field, but when you've got big guys like Leonard Williams and Byron Murphy taking additional reps, which is what happened when Jaren Reed went out, it does wear on them, especially over the course of multiple games. And having someone like Jaron Reed, that the coaching staff feels just as good having him out there as any of the other guys, I think sets the Seahawks up for a strong finish where their best players in the interior, which are by Byron Murphy and Leonard Williams, can be fresher and can have maybe like Leonard Williams can be a game wrecker against the Rams in a way that they would need him to be. They need their best players to play their best in those games. So I think that's probably the biggest factor of how Jaron Reed helps. I also think Jaron Reed makes them a better overall run defense. And I think that's also really, really critical. As far as Julian Love, I'll just say this. I thought his play in that game was as good as any other play in that game. The one I'm talking about is the pass breakup early in that one. I don't know if I've ever seen a defensive back, corner, or safety be as savvy in that moment as Julian was. It was almost like he had heard what JSN had said about defensive backs tensing up when the ball's in the air, and he's like, not me. Because he was cool as the other side of the pillow, to use a stewardism. And, you know, he just completely positioned himself so the catch was impossible and did not get a DPI. So he's also super smart. I'm sure Mike noticed, Rob noticed. There was a play early on where it was a running play. Julian motions before anybody else which direction the run's going to go to. As soon as he pointed that direction, I saw Ernest also, who wasn't looking at Julian, also pointed. They all started shifting. Run goes there. No gain. He's just smart. He's calm. He's collected. And he is a Pro Bowl level player at this point. So you can't hate having that back in your backfield, in your defensive backfield.
Certainly nice to have that back. Rob, what stood out to you from just seeing these players back?
Well, firstly, Brian, can you remember Darryl Tapp had that big club on his hand? He had that big,
I do.
Remember the big game he had with a huge, it was like clobbering everybody with it. That's what it reminded me of, seeing Jaron Reed with that thing on his hand.
I remember more that what John Schneider got for Darryl Tapp than that club on his hand. What a trade that was. Yeah. Chris Clemens and change.
Yeah. Well, I'd like Jaron Reed. He's pretty much my favorite Seahawks player. I just like the intensity. There was a shot of the Seahawks put it on Twitter before the game that he was the one in the sort of the tunnel area addressing the team before they went out onto the field. And for me, Jaron Reed has always had that kind of presence to him. And I've always liked those kind of players. You know, it was like a Red Bryant back in the day. You know, I think you need just a handful of players like that that are just, they're not necessarily your best players, but they set the tone. They've got that sort of physical edge. And just to see Jaron Reed back out there, albeit with that huge club on his hand, was great to see. And it's a shame. I feel bad for him that he got the force fumble taken off him, because DeMarcus Lawrence has made a lot of plays recently. So it would have been good for Jaron Reed to get that one. And Julian Love's just one of Seattle's best players. Just to have him back, it's almost like a trade mid-season that he's suddenly back in the team. And you sort of throw those two players back in there. And we've seen the defense playing so well for a number of weeks. Then you throw Jaron Reed and Julian Love back into the mix, and you think, this is exactly that. Just this is where team seasons fall apart when they lose injuries. You know, it's this kind of like final month of the season. You lose a few key players to injury now, and you suddenly, it dawns, and you're not going to have that opportunity in the playoffs, unless, of course, you're the Eagles and suddenly Nick Foles comes in and wins you a Super Bowl. Like, that very rarely happens. You have key injuries at this time of year, and that can derail your season. Touch wood, that's not going to happen with the Seahawks. They're actually getting players back from injured reserve. Key players are coming back onto this team. And the defense could get even better in the next 4 weeks. So I fully expect that they're going to have a big impact. I've just got a feeling, you know, you were talking about Nick Emenwori and defensive. He's going to do something against the Rams. That's going to be the thing that gets him ahead of Carson Schwessinger for that award. Because let's be honest, even I could play linebacker behind Myles Garrett. So I think it's there for Emenwori to go ahead and go and claim that award with a big play in the next few weeks. And having Julian Love alongside him is probably going to help.
It's going to happen. I'm calling it right now. He's going to win that award. He's going to finish strong. He's going to be on national TV. And come on. I mean, he'll be the first Seahawks player ever to win Defensive Rookie of the Year, which is crazy.
It'd be pretty incredible. But I do want to talk about a guy on offense who has also just made a splash, maybe more so in Seattle than nationally, but we got to talk about him because Sam Darnold is just the second quarterback in NFL history with 10 win consecutive seasons with two different teams. Only other guy, you may have heard of him. He talks on TV sometimes, Tom Brady. But just, Mike, you know, what do you think about how the national media maybe is not giving Darnold the props? I mean, that is a pretty small group of people to be in company with.
Yeah, I mean, I think Darnold and Geno both were victims, probably too strong of a word, but you know what I mean, being like, well, I've seen you stink before, you know what I mean? Like in New York, and you're like, well, I need more evidence, and which is fine. I don't really fault those people. Like the Rams game validated a lot of those critics. And I think that's why you see Darnold not. I think even I tweet out like the top 10 vote getters in the Pro Bowl every week now because the league sends out the little PR release. I think Darnold's like 10th in that first release. He was behind Jackson Dart, I believe. I think he's still even only like sixth behind, in NFC quarterbacks. He's in the top 10, but he's not even like a shoe in to be a Pro Bowler, which is kind of crazy to think about. You know, this is a fun stat I was looking at. I put in a story ahead today, I think. Darnold is like eighth or ninth in EPA per play or EPA per drop back, which is basically an efficiency stat. And that's while leading the league in turnovers and second in the league in turnover rate. So then I was like, okay, what is he doing on the plays he's not turning it over? So then in true media, you can filter that out. Like turnover, click no. In plays without a turnover, Darnold leads the league in EPA per drop back. Like it's very simple with him, though this also speaks to the criticism. If Darnold protects the ball, he's as good as anybody in the league right now. Like it really is. Like his explosive play numbers, his touchdown rate, you know, if you like other stuff like passer rating, whatever. I think he's averaging like 9 yards an attempt, which is pretty nuts. Like his numbers are really good, regardless, even if you have the turnovers. Take those out of the sample and you see what happens in the second half of that Falcons game. Like he is playing at a really high level. He just has like one or two, what the hell were you thinking plays a game. And to be fair, you can't have those if you want to go win a Super Bowl. But he's independent of like any long-term goals. He's playing really well. He's playing better than I thought he would play. Like Rob mentioned at the top of the show, like some people would have been happy with a 10-win season. I didn't think they'd win 10 games. So to have 10 already with four left, I am very impressed with how the whole team is playing. But yes, Darnold is playing way better than I thought. He's not being carried by the run game at all. Every week, Mike McDonald's like, yeah, I wish we had more explosive runs because they don't have them. Their explosiveness is specifically Sam throwing it to Jax. It's well over 50-60% of their explosive elements of their offense is 14 to 11. So that's a big credit to Sam. I think he obviously needs to stop turning the ball over. That's where the critics are going to come. And they have the numbers to back that up. They have the Rams film to back that up too. But when he protects it, he's not just like a good quarterback. He legit is one of the best in the league, which I didn't think I'd be saying that on December, whatever day it is, about Sam Darnold.
Brian, I'm sure you've also done a deep dive into just the Seahawks quarterback recently.
Yeah, I was just looking at this as Mike was talking, and I'm going to give you guys a list of other quarterbacks in the NFL this year who have 10 or 11 interceptions, okay? The list is Justin Herbert, Dak Prescott, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Joe Flacco in fewer games, Trevor Lawrence. Those are the other guys that have 10 or 11. Now, Tua and Geno Smith have 14. I don't think you want to get into that category, you know, and Sam has 11. I think it's interesting that you just don't hear this about, like, Justin Herbert has literally the same amount of touchdowns and the same amount of interceptions as Sam Darnold and has a lower passer rating and a lower QBR. And guess what he did in the playoffs last year? He threw like four picks in the playoffs against Houston. But nobody, like, Justin Herbert's clearly one of the top two quarterbacks. And there's nobody in Los Angeles who happens to be a Chargers fan. I don't know how many of those exist that is hand-wringing about, well, when we get the playoffs, is Justin Herbert going to screw us? Because they got other bigger problems. And so the reality is the Seahawks, this is the best team the Seahawks have had in 15 years. And it's not close. Well, 13 years, I would say. And it's not close. They have the fewest weaknesses. And the fact that they have so few weaknesses and the fact that the games have been so drama-free, I think has left people with like, okay, I'm going to rail on Anthony Bradford. I'm going to rail on Sam Darnold. Like, those are my two things, because those things aren't good enough. Forget the fact that this is the most explosive passing offense the Seahawks have had in ever. Forget the fact that this is the best offensive line play that the Seahawks have had in a decade. I think people are looking for what they need, should feel anxious about. And there is no doubt the biggest thing to feel anxious about for what is a juggernaut team is Sam Darnold's ability to make the right choice in the right moment. And I'm going to ask him this week. I've got a question along these lines that it should be fun to hear his answer. Who knows? Sam's kind of a standard answer kind of guy. But I think that folks need to, need's the wrong word. I think folks are missing out on a really fun team with absolute Super Bowl potential because of an issue that, I mean, you think that the Eagles would trade their offense for the Seahawks offense? I think they would. I think they would. And I think almost every other NFC team would outside of the Rams. So that's kind of where I see things. Although I do understand why people, you know, are like, stop doing that. Just run the ball. Like, just take the first down. Stop forcing it. It's easy to pick those moments out.
Rob, what are you taking from the conversation just surrounding Sam Darnold right now and what you're seeing with him really just be the reality of the situation?
I thought that was a brilliant answer from Brian and agree with everything he said there. I think the modern NFL is, it's almost no longer about whether your team wins or loses or whether your team can win enough games to get into a position where they can have a, you know, an interesting postseason or ultimately just get through the postseason games. It's because like every game has to be perfection. There has to be like nothing wrong with your team. You have to do all of the things that you're supposed to do, that everyone's worked out that you're supposed to do this, this, and this, and you have to do it. And if you've got one player, it doesn't matter. I have to say, like, when I started watching the NFL, you didn't know who the right guard was on most teams. And that's not because every right guard in the NFL was amazing. It's just because people didn't talk about stuff like how the right guard is playing. And I'm making little highlight clips of his three worst plays every week so that we can have a good laugh at how bad he is. Like, that just didn't happen. And we kind of do these things now, and you can't, it does suck the enjoyment out of the sport for me a little bit. Like, you never really feel like, instead of just sort of coming off afterwards and thinking the Seahawks have won 26-0, we're talking about all of the things that went wrong after the game. Like, I did two podcasts last week where all of the talk was like, what's wrong with Sam Darnold? Is Sam Darnold a problem? And I'm kind of thinking, did they won? Like, they did what they had to do. Why are we talking about this? And now you get to the point where Brian's absolutely right. Like, there were quarterbacks across the league a few years ago. Interceptions went way down. Like, all of the top quarterbacks were throwing like 3, 4, 5 interceptions. It's not that kind of a season. Like, a lot of the main guys are throwing picks. Look at Patrick Mahomes the other night. Like, this is the best quarterback that maybe has ever lived. And he's not flawless. He's making mistakes. He's having misfortune that leads to, you know, Travis Kelce's tipping a pass. It's going up in the air and getting picked off. Sam Darnold's had a couple of those this year. Like, this is just the way this season is going. And do you watch Sam Darnold play in that first half in Atlanta and think, it's in the bag, this? You know, of course the Seahawks can win the Super Bowl. No, you don't. But I give him a ton of credit for the way that he had a rough first half and came back in the second and played exactly, for me, the way he did against the Commanders on the road in that first half. It was just flawless. He settled down. The pass protection was a little bit better. He was getting through his reads. He was going to the right targets. He was throwing touchdowns again. I think there's a lot to like about Sam Darnold. And I know this. I don't want to repeat this point again. What a masterstroke that was by John Schneider to make the call to move on. I know the dynamic is that he was prepared to stick with Geno Smith and all of that. I get that. The way that they pivoted to Sam Darnold like that makes me think there was a lot of pre-planning around that move, even if it was just contingency planning, to be able to move off one quarterback and onto the other in free agency without making some kind of big splashy trade or drafting someone in the first round and get to a point where you have won 10 games with 4 games left and your quarterback has played pretty well for most of this season, I think should be applauded. And especially when you look at the Vikings, look how they have collapsed with their mess of a quarterback situation since Darnold left. And I have to say, the player who left Seattle, it's certainly not all his fault, but he's gone to the Raiders. They may end up picking first overall this year. So I think you have to give the Seahawks and John Schneider a lot of credit. He's made legitimately about 5 or 6 moves this year, which are top anything that any other GM has done in the NFL. So, and that was one of them, getting Sam Darnold, and kudos to the player, kudos to the GM as well.
Well, we'll definitely have to have the exec of the year conversation maybe on next week's Seahawks Collective. So another reason to tune in. And anytime you hear Rob's Wi-Fi going out, it's the other pirates that are just at the Disney cruise with him that are attacking the Wi-Fi, trying to disrupt. Maybe it's some Colts. Maybe it's some Colts pirates. I don't know. Maybe they're trying to get well, in on our makes show. Sense
the Raiders, down. The Raiders pirates didn't like him talking about Geno that way, maybe.
That would make a lot more sense than the Colts. So that's probably what we're going to go with. But just quickly before we get to that next game, I do want to get each of you, you know, where do you think this offensive line will look like? Because Jalen Sundell is able to come off IR. Mike McDonald really didn't give us too much of a response when asked about where he'll be. He said, we'll see. So just from each of you, just quickly, you know, where are you throwing him? If you are the head coach, you slotting him center, guard, making him a backup. We'll start with you, Mike. Where are you putting him?
Yeah, I'll probably just go back to the original starting five, put him back at center. Olu's fine. Like, he's a decent center. I think, like, not terrible, not probably like a Pro Bowl center, although he's like 10th in voting. I'd probably just put Jalen right back in there. I've never really thought Anthony Bradford is at the, like, the anybody but him portion of the O-line play, like Seahawks fans tend to think he's like their new punching bag. I do think he played bad earlier in the year, but like, he's playing really good. Tape's been pretty decent, you know, so yeah, I would probably just throw Jalen back there in the middle. And be good. And yeah, Brian's right. This is probably the best O-line they've had since the last one Unger played on, I would say, whatever year that was. That's
2014.
Yeah, it clears a decade. So yeah, I mean, they've had a lot of O-lines in between those. You know, this is really good stuff that we're not talking about, like, oh, what's up with the O-line every week? Because we did this last year. We'd have led the show with that, like, how many games? 17? At least like 12 weeks. We'd have led probably with the O-line last year. And the fact that we never do speaks to what the line is.
Brian, you feel similarly?
I do. I would say that the Seahawks offensive line has been bad enough for the past decade that you could call it a defensive line. Like, they were more helpful to the defense than they were to the Seahawks offense. And yeah, I mean, I really am curious, because I think that the coaching staff believes Jalen Sundell is one of their best 5 linemen. And I think maybe 2 weeks ago, they were probably heading towards a path of maybe he was going to take over for Anthony Bradford. Anthony Bradford has played 2 pretty good games. And really, 4 of his last 5 have been pretty decent. So I have a feeling Mike's right. I think they're going to go back to the group that got them there. And the question for me, if that's the case, is, the running game has improved the last 5 weeks. We talked about that last week. How much of that is Oluwatimi and what he's doing at center, and how much of it's due to the team just getting better? How much is due to Rashid Shaheed, as Clint Kubiak implied last week, affecting how teams are playing them against the run? So that's the question. And then, like, the flip side is the passing game was better when Jalen was in there. I'm not sure the pass protection was or wasn't, and I'm not sure how much of it had to do with him or didn't. I think we tend to, like, apply too much to one player on the offensive line in this kind of situation. So what a blessing, I guess, if you're a Seahawks coach, to be able to be spoiled for choice and just say, well, we could be fine if we kept Olu in there. We could be fine if we put Sundell in there. We could be fine if we play him at guard or center. I mean, the fact that they have those kind of choices, when in past years it was like, please, sir, may I have a thimbleful of water, a thimbleful of offensive line play? And now they've got an overflowing cup.
Rob, do you feel this overflowing cup sentiment?
Yes, I do. I think I'd keep it the same. I think I don't know what they're going to do. I just think that it's unfortunate for Sundell that he's had the injury. Olu's come in. I've not noticed him, which I think is always a good thing with the sense. When you don't notice the sense, it's never a bad thing. I'd be tempted just to keep it as it is for now and sort of reassess you know, in a couple of weeks. There's no rush to get Sundell back in there. You know, let him have that little bit of extra time, keep it for another couple of weeks, and then just sort of maybe after that Rams game, assess what you want to do, because then you've got, a couple of games to go and then the playoffs. So I'd probably give it a couple of games and then decide who's going to be your center, who's going to be right guard. That gives, you know, another good couple of games to assess Anthony Bradford, see if his improvement can continue in pass protection. And it also gives you a chance to assess whether you want to play Sundell at center or at right guard. So, yeah, I'd keep it as it is for now.
I like it. No sound in the alarm here on the Seahawks Collective tonight. Maybe a little different conversations than we had in the past, but like Brian, like you said, that's probably best case scenario. But we do want to get to week 15 because it's already here, and the Seahawks will take on the Colts, like we mentioned. But first, we do want to share our sponsor for this season. So check out this quick video.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
Yeah, check it out. It's great to keep up with what's all going on, the news, alerts, live stats, win money, and even real-time chat with others. So make sure you check out the number one sports app today and try it out for yourself. Use promo code HMA and you'll get up to a $100 match on your first deposit. Terms and conditions apply. See Sleeper's terms of use for details. Currently operational in over 25 states. So check out the Sleeper app today. And hopefully our guys will have been able to catch up on some sleep because they're not making the trip again to the East Coast. But the Seahawks will be hosting the Indianapolis Colts on Sunday, a team that really started this year off shocking the world and saw a devastating loss to their quarterback, Daniel Jones, with a torn Achilles on Sunday. It was really Indiana Jones. Like, people were freaking out about the performance that he was having that season. So massive, massive hit for them. But huge news today that the Colts are signing Phillip Rivers. Yes, I said that. Phillip Rivers to the practice squad. They'll have to see how practice goes this week, but certainly something to watch. And it was going to be, and it still could be, Riley Leonard, the rookie out of Notre Dame, the next man up. But he's dealing with his own knee injury as well. A few weeks ago, I did actually interview Riley Leonard on Sports Spectrum. He is an awesome guy, great leader. He is really soaking up what Daniel Jones had to share with him. So I can just imagine now adding Phillip Rivers potentially into that facility that he'll do the same. But just some serious hits to the health of the Colts offense. And I guess just first, can you just respond, Mike, to the addition of Phillip Rivers and how quickly the tide has turned for the Colts?
Yeah, I mean, this is that you want to talk about desperation. This is right up there with hiring Jeff Saturday to coach the team. This is really great. We just had James Boyd, my colleague at The Athletic, who covers the Colts, busy man this week. We had him on the pod. We were talking about the absurdity of this move. I mean, coaches, I think the Niners thought about doing this a few years ago, I believe. They were going to call. He was on a short list of guys they were going to call for injuries they had. So, like, in the coaching world, it's probably like, oh, yeah, it makes sense. You know, but for me, I'm like, you guys are tripping, man. You don't play football for 5 years or whatever it's been, and you want to go out there and get hit? I remember when it took Marshawn to build up the little short-term callus in his body to come back in 2019, and I think that was only after a two-year layoff, maybe a year and some change, and he had to go live in practice just to get prepared to go. Now, running backs take more hits, but the idea is the same. Your body is not used to that if you take that time off. So I think it's really crazy, and I just can't think of you go look at the Colts schedule. They got these guys. They play the Jags again. They got the Niners. They got some Monday night game. And they close with the Texans. Whoever they play could get hurt. That is brutal. They could easily, me and James were just talking about this, they could start 7-1 and miss the playoffs. Like, I would not be surprised if they finished the year 8-9 and missed that. That is absurd. I feel actually bad for them, for their fans, because that's, think of all the promise they had when they made the Sauce trade and everything. We're contenders. Let's give up two firsts for Sauce. He's put us over the top. We got this. We got a quarterback. They have none of that. Sauce is hurt. Daniel Jones is hurt. And they're 8-5. As I feel really bad for Colts fans. And I might even feel even worse at 4:15 local time Sunday when picking up Phillip Rivers' face off Lumen Field.
Yeah, you know, I feel bad for Colts fans too. I was lived in Indianapolis when my dad was playing for the Colts for 3 years. That's like a nice fan base. Like, they're just nice Midwest, like normal, great people, like Lucas Oil, just a fun place to be. So you can just imagine how this has just hurt them emotionally. But Rob, I got to get your thoughts on this potential addition with Philip Rivers.
Well, I think it's fantastic news because those of us in our early 40s know that, you know, you can't still achieve things at this stage in life. So, yeah, I think it's great. What a baptism of fire. Like, short of playing the Texans, is there a greater challenge for Philip Rivers? Who, by the way, always plays well against the Seahawks. That's the one thing I am slightly worried about, is like somehow – Philip Rivers could look really crap 1 week, you know, in his peak when it was the San Diego Chargers, and then he'd play the Seahawks LOB era defense and just light them up every single time. So there is that sort of just that little nagging doubt at the back of my mind. But somebody pointed out on Twitter, he's a grandfather now. And he's going to get out there and play in the NFL at the age of 44 with his 10 kids. Like, I just can't imagine the man. I mean, look, I've got 2 kids and I'm tired enough. Like, he's got 10. There's like 6 players.
You're doing
on
a lot. You're at the Disney cruise. You got the pirate thing on. Like, come on, you're doing it all, Rob. should be tired.
I think the 6 players on the roster for the Colts who are younger than his oldest child. Like, it's amazing how this is all coming about. So really, this should be another comfortable win for the Seahawks. That's kind of how I'm viewing everything here. Is that the aim from now until that Rams game is to stay healthy and unbeaten. And this news this week will give the Seahawks a better chance of getting to that game as healthy as possible and still unbeaten between those 2 Rams games. So it's good news. I'm fully expecting another thrashing in this game and a nice easy night on the couch at midnight where the Seahawks have handsomely won this contest.
Brian, what was your initial reaction when you saw this news? And are you, like Rob, have that in the back of your head of Philip Rivers' history against the Seahawks?
I mean, my first thought was, why is your dad not getting a call?
Listen, I thought about it too. You know what's funny is that there have been multiple times throughout his retirement when he will mention, oh, hey, you know, this could happen. I could get this call. You know, like, there have been enough times throughout his retirement that has happened. And like, there's definitely an excitement in you. Like, I know my siblings are, okay, like, are we going to move for a week? Like, what's the situation? What team are we going to be rooting for? It's definitely exciting. So I can only imagine how fun that is for his many kids and grandchildren, apparently, which is wild. But yeah, you know, I don't know if Matty Hass is getting the call for this one.
Well, shout out to your dad and your mom and your sister. I somehow scrolling TikTok came across a video of the 4 of you all dancing. And that was the first time I had seen your dad making the moves. And
he's all about it.
It was impressive. It was impressive. No, honestly, my initial reaction was, you know what? It's nice that in past years, if this had been announced, I would have been like, the Seahawks are going to lose this game. They're 100% going to lose this game. They lose to Colt McCoy, Case Keenum, like whoever is like a guy that you should not lose to in a big moment, Mason Rudolph, they're going to lose that game. And that even was the LOB level teams would lose those games. And I don't feel that way with a Mike McDonald led team. And I don't think Mike McDonald gives a crap who is on the other side. He is going to torture who's ever there to the fact that, I mean, my advice for Philip Rivers, not that he's going to be listening, but I mean, make sure he spends time with all 10 of his kids, because I'm not sure he's going to remember their names by the end of Sunday. Like, it is a brutal, brutal thing to put him on the other side of this defense. And as good as he was when he played, good luck, man. I certainly would not wish it on somebody that I cared for, let alone somebody who's opposing the Seahawks.
Yeah, that would be sure a scary sight if you haven't seen it in the near past, right? Near future in getting blitzed like we're going to see. But before we wrap up today, I would love to just know what's on the docket for each of you. So, Mike, what do you have coming up this week?
Yeah, I teased it a little earlier. We do our one big thing where we watch the film and go over Chris and I go over our biggest takeaway. So we have that, and in the back half of that episode, we always preview the upcoming opponent. We're lucky enough James fit us in his schedule. Good insight on a Colts team that was actually on the downslide with Daniel Jones, to be honest. So we get into all that. So that's going to be available Wednesday morning on all platforms. So please go check that out. And as always, if you want to book for me, hit me up. My DMs are open. I'll get you one at a game. We can meet up, sign it for you in person, or I can ship one to you. Just hit me up. Appreciate the love on people who've been buying books from me.
Get the book so Mike doesn't have to miss any of the next game. We don't want him to
pre-game. Meet me pre-game. Pre-game, not at halftime. That's all I ask. Pre-game. Thank you. So I don't miss any. I missed Ernest Jones' interception against the Niners too, actually, for the same reason. Sign a book. So hopefully I don't. Well, maybe I should actually now, because they do good things when I miss it. So maybe I'll keep doing that. We'll see.
Rob, what's coming up for you?
Pillaging. Ransacking tomorrow. Probably make the kids walk the plank because they're doing my head in. I will not be doing. I've got one article that's going to publish tomorrow, and then my feet will be up until the Colts game on Sunday. So enjoy the week.
Enjoy the sun too while you have it. Brian, what's coming up for you?
I will say I am kind of robbing from Peter to pay Paul. I am working on a pretty big article. And so I will be doing my first look episode tomorrow without a guest for the first time, probably this year. I am going to have Joe Fan and Evan Hill on Real Hawk Talk Thursday. That should be entertaining for folks that know that pair. And we'll figure out who else is going to be on this week, but for now, keep an eye out on hawkblogger.com. I got some good stuff that I think people are going to enjoy, hopefully by Thursday, if not earlier.
I love it. Well, you all are hard workers, and we appreciate everyone who tuned in on this Tuesday and getting ready for the Seahawks to take on the Colts back at Lumen Field in Seattle. Thanks so much for tuning in. We are so excited about this week's game. Go Hawks!